Good evening, everyone. Those of you who I didn't already greet, welcome. I've had a phrase in my head since this morning, kind of like obsessional. I heard it in a, I was watching a, it's kind of complicated, but a memorial service for a rabbi who I know who had died and who was also a Zen master. And there were people talking about him on a Zoom thing. And one of them read an email that he had written 10 years ago, in which he told a lot of stories and said things and beautiful things. And then as he was getting to the end of the email, he wrote, "I haven't actually said what I wanted to say." And then he added, "What would I say if I said it?" And I have not been able to get that phrase out of my head. What would I say if I said it? And it's kind of been driving me crazy. Not really, but I just, it's like I'm fascinated by it. So I stayed with it and I thought, you know, there was a moment when I thought, wow, this is like this is my ultimate koan. What would I say if I said it? And then it comes to like, well, what is it that I want to say? You know, what is it that I'm saying? You know, something like that. Or so. If I'm saying it, what am I saying, or something I could say, or maybe there's an answer that is, so Lisa's asking if it's if I'd said it or if I said it, if I said it. That's what I heard anyway. So maybe an answer could be something like, you know, well, I'm saying what I would say if I said it, or what I'm saying is what I would say if I said it. So I tried all these different formulations. And this was throughout the day, and making lunch and doing Qigong and doing Dokusans and whatever. And then I went for a walk. It was a beautiful afternoon. Went for a walk in the park where I usually go for a walk. And I changed the direction to see if maybe that would help me with this question, if I didn't follow the same path. And so then I started trying other things with it. Trying, for example, instead of what would I say if I said it, what would I be if I was it? Or who would I be if I was me? Or where would I go if I was going there, or something? And when I phrased it in these different ways, it became even more rich, actually. Now, I'm not sure that, I mean, this rabbi, he was just, you know, fabulous man. And I think when he died, Joa and I talked about it, because he was someone who we both met at Auschwitz. And he was called, his name was Rabbi Don Singer, but we also called him, you know, Don the Singing Rabbi, because he always sang at Auschwitz. Which was really just outrageous, but absolutely fabulous and beautiful and wonderful. But and he had us, we all sang at Auschwitz with him. So when he died, we talked about him, and this was his memorial service. And I didn't listen to the whole thing. I just watched a bit of it because I didn't really know any of the other people or anything. I did know a couple of the Zen people who spoke. But in that letter, I don't know if he was like, if this was a koan. And yet I know that it was. I mean, he was absolutely asking, this is how he thought, you know, what would I say if I said it? It also kind of makes me think of, you know, in Judaism, you don't pronounce the name of God. You don't say it. Or in Islam, you know, you're not allowed to have an image of Muhammad, of the divine, you can't have an image. And in Judaism, you can't say it. And this, it's not like some kind of, it has become, I think, you know, in the fundamentalist points of view in the various religions, it has become a position of good and bad and what's something that's forbidden, and it's become a concept. Whereas I think for me, and I think for Don, the essence was what he was talking about, that the essence cannot be said, because then it becomes a concept. The divine cannot have a name, because then it becomes a concept. So when he says, what would I say if I said it? He really can't imagine what he would say, because there's nothing to say. And yet we're saying it. As soon as we start trying to imagine or fix what we say, then it's no longer that. You know, I wish Rabbi Singer was around so I could talk with him about this and ask him. I'm sure he would have just some joyful, wonderful thing to say about it. Maybe he's, you know, somewhere laughing at us all for wondering about it. You know, it's like James Joyce said that he had written a book that would keep university professors and scholars busy for eternity, trying to take it apart and analyze it and make sense of it, make it into a concept. And it also makes me think of, you know, my other favorite is Giacometti, who maintained that he was never able to do it. He was never able to make the drawing, make the sculpture. He was probably living constantly with, what would I say if I said it? How can I say it? And I also came across a quote, this was completely unrelated, something about, I was reading about Marc Chagall, you know, the artist Chagall, who said, if I create from the heart, nearly everything works. If from the head, almost nothing. And isn't this kind of the same thing about what would I say if I say it? I said it. If I'm thinking about what I'm saying, what I would say, I'm already moving away from it. I forget when we were talking about this. Was it last week's talk? No, when we were talking about, oh no, it was in the study group when we had the koan about Nansen and Joshi. as soon as you go towards it, you're going away from it. And someone was making a joke about here and there. You know, as soon as we go there, we're here. So this whole thing, and it works in Portuguese, definitely it works. I mean, you know, as soon as you say you're one place, you're already in the other one. You're in that place that you said was not where you are, like here and there. In French too, it works pretty well. I don't know about Polish, but and there was this I think it was something in Sesame Street about Grover, one of the characters in Sesame Street talking about here and there, and you know, teaching kids about words and how to spell them and concepts and things. And so the character, the puppet, would be here, and then he would say, "I'm going there." And then when he got to there, he would say, "Oh, but I'm here." And so then he would say, "I'll go there," to point back to where he was before. And he would go there, and he'd say, "Oh, but I'm here." So he could never get there because he was always here. So it's like, you know, Zen for children or something. And this thing about, you know, what would I say if I said it, is like that. I'm already saying it. I'm already it. So, you know, it's who would I be if I was me? What would I be if I was it? Or where would I go if I was going there? And I was thinking about that while I'm walking along this path on my walk. Just trying out different formulations. So, you know, that was my obsession for the day. I say for the day, but it's kind of what my life is all the time. Takes different form, but that's it. That's what I do. But I've been doing this for 30 years. At the end of this month, it will be 30 years that I started this practice. And it's a long time to just sit. And I had lunch the other day with an old Dharma friend from Dana, who I also met. I met her in 1994. Some of you know her, definitely Tiago, Carol, who, and Debbie knows her, and Lisa knows her too, Carol. Who never fails to remind me that I'm the one who brought her to Dana, to Gena Roshi, which I don't really think of it that way, but it's true. She was an editor at Tricycle Magazine in New York, Carol, and I had, you know, met Gena Roshi and was like completely enthralled and thought that Tricycle should do a story about Gena Roshi. And because I was a journalist, I offered to do it. And I wrote to them. This was before internet. And I wrote to them. And they wrote back, and the editor, not Carol, another editor, the editor-in-chief wrote back and said, "Well, listen, you know, it really seems better if someone who's not her student would do the article." And I agreed. And I'm going to be in Paris with one of my assistant editors, Carol, in, you know, 2 months or something. And how about if we arrange, we have lunch and we arrange an interview with Geno-sensei at the time. So we accepted that. Geno was okay with that. And so they came. And Carol and Helen Torkoff, the editor of the magazine, came to my apartment in the Marais. And then we went to Roshi's apartment at the time where she was living, on the 17th. And we all went to lunch at a restaurant. And then we went back to her apartment and had the interview and everything. And Carol just loved Geno Roshi, Geno Sensei, and was doing her job interviewing and things, but and was planning to move like in 6 months to London because her husband had a job in London. And so she said, okay, well, you know, I'll come to Paris when we practice, when I get there. And she did. First, I think we met her in London, in England. She came to a retreat in England in 95. Anyway, all that is a long story to say that I had lunch with Carol, and she's now living in the house, Donna, and had last week gave her first Dharma talk during the session that they had. So we started talking and about, you know, our prep paths and everything. And so we both started more or less around the same time. And however, I gave my first Dharma talk in April of 2000, which is a long time ago. And Carol, she came for a few years and then she disappeared for like 5 years. She had a baby and she was doing other things, whatever. Came back and she was living in London and whatever. And we both agreed, however, that there was no that her path was her path and my path was mine. And both of those paths were saying it. We didn't even need to say, what would I say if I said it? Because we were saying it with our lives and our path, our way. We each had our way. And there was no fast or short, and there were no detours, and there was no getting lost. There was no, it was all it. And that was quite a wonderful thing to share, because our paths look very different, and yet they're not. They are, and they're not. I was not there for her first Dharma talk. I was in Portugal, and she was not there for my first Dharma talk. She was in London. And yet we were on the same path, and we are both it, you know. I can't remember what her Dharma name is. Does anyone know? Tiago, do you know what her Dharma name is?
Something Brocade?
Ah, yes, you're right. It is.
Something like that?
What?
It's a flower of brocade or something?
Yeah. I think you're right, yeah.
It's from Koan.
Yeah, it's a Koan, yeah. That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So. Yeah. So, that's all of that is just an example of how, when, what would I say if I said it? Her path is expressing it, and mine's too, and yours too, and our, right now we're sitting here saying it. And I'm not quite so sure why that praise this morning caught me, but because there was a lot of beautiful things that were said. And that is not necessarily something beautiful, but it is beautiful. Maybe it's also because it was Rabbi Singer who said it, and so if, does anyone have anything they would like to share or ask or say? What would you say if you said it? Marek?
You have a master or a mistress, the black and white that we've seen on the screen, and she or he knows the answer to this question, I think, because... to me, it's our human ambition to achieve something in this life, or to understand something, or to do something. To maybe it's also in your case, maybe you feel also a pressure because you are in the position of a teacher. So maybe it's some unspoken expectation that you are supposed to teach us something very, you know, very important. And I imagine that it can be a huge burden, and instead of, allow yourself to be enlightened by 10,000 things, then you think how to enlighten those poor souls that are sitting on the other side of the Zoom Zendo. So these were my thoughts, and also it's connected to the black cat that I was with. This winter that passed away a month ago, and she was very the Cinderella of cats, also known as Manjushri. And she wasn't the smartest of cats. She was, I would say, the other cats were smarter than her. If there was some new trick to learn, she was the last to learn, I would say. But despite not being very smart or very clever, she was wise, I would say. And what now I'm reflecting on being with her for this 19 or 20 years, I think what, of course, I felt a lot also of this ambition that I think was in your is somehow connected with this story, so I realized being with her that it's because the only thing that she wanted all her life was a little bit of food and being not being mistreated by her sister or by other cat, and that was enough for her. And if she had a little bit of companion, that was all she would ever want. And I think what a lesson it is for me that maybe I don't have this pressure that you have, Emmy, because I'm not a teacher. I don't have to enlighten anybody. But still, you know, being a man, being a human being, of course, there is a pressure, the pressure from the family to achieve something, from the friends. What did you do? And I understood that, you know, being with Charnusha, with this cat, that it's, you know, that it's more than enough to being able to share your days with a being that cares about us, that we care with each other, and that we really don't need to say it or say anything. You know, if we ask our cats, what would you say if you say it? He or she would give an answer, meow, or just close its eyes and get back to their nap. So I think it would, that's all I can say with relation to this question. I'm not sure if I knew this rabbi that you said. I was only once in Auschwitz. It was the year that, for some reasons, Tetzug and Glassman was not able to come, but I remember that some Jewish people came and they arranged for us the Saturday dinner, the Shabbos dinner, which was, I believe, which was not very orthodox, but it was for other people to see. And I remember some rabbis there, not sure if it was the same man. I'm sorry, I don't understand his name, but I remember this Shabbos dinner and those nice Jewish people that were there that November in 2001, I believe it was. And if, there was also one thing I wanted to share with you. I've seen it's connected with the workshop that we had a few weeks ago about boundaries and about protecting students from the teachers. And I've just seen on YouTube, there is an Arte TV. This is a European TV network, and they had like 1 hour long film about the scandals in Gelugpa sect in Europe, in France. And if you like, I can, I'm sure there is, I've seen it. It was in French with Polish subtitles, but perhaps it's a European network. I will put in the chat box the link in a while. If you like, you can see it. And if you like to see it in your language, then perhaps you can Google it. And I wanted to mention it today because I've seen the announcement that it will be available on YouTube till 11th of May. So for one more week. So the time is a bit limited. And the last thing I would like to say, which is somehow connected with it, I got in touch with Salt Lake City with Genpo Roshi Center, and I spoke with Bruce, who runs the business, and I told him about this workshop that I attended, the same workshop that we are talking about these boundaries, and ask him whether he thinks that it is there any chance. I ask him that this controversies may somehow be resolved between Genpo Roshi and community. I told him about article in that recycle that I wrote about a letter of a few dozens of Zen teachers that asked Genpo Roshi to you know the story because you told us yourself anyway. What Bruce answered me, he said, you know, Genpo Roshi is very, very much would like those things to get settled, but it was it. I asked him, is there anything I can be of help to do it? And he said, well, if you like, you can tell others that Genpo Roshi would somehow make this right, but I have no it looks like they have no other clue what to do next. And I thought that until Masumi Roshi was alive, that there was somebody Genpo would listen to, if we who could mediate. I wonder if there is anybody who would be acceptable as a mediator in this case, both for Genpo and for the community. But I wanted to mention it to you sorry for taking so much time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
I want to be sure that people can speak if they want to. Anyone like to comment or say anything else? Questions? Anything to add?
Well, as always, it's good to see you all. And I'm basically just feeling gratitude's too big a word, but thank you, Roshi, for telling this story, because I go to Donna every Tuesday for a text study, and Carol is there. And she's in the house now. And last Tuesday, Geno said, oh, look, there are five Americans in the circle of the text study. And I don't know why, because Carol does not have an English accent, but I thought, who's the fifth one? And then we all said who we were, and I said, you're an American? And I guess I'd sort of made up a Carol, because I don't know anything really about her, except that she's always come with Tanya in the past. So in my head, she was an English girl that was coming now to the house and stuff. So all of this fills out my, so then I realized that I'd made up this completely false person. She was born in Philadelphia, apparently, and she's an American. And then now everything you said sort of puts her in context, because when Geno said that, I thought, isn't that funny? I mean, I've seen her, I even slept in a room with her for Joa's transmission, and I made up a totally false person that just, her face, her name, and then I created this whole story about her that was completely false. So thank you for all the details. It was nice to hear her story, and not the one that I invented.
Funny, huh? How that happens. You know, people we see for years and years, and we have no idea. You know. I just wanted to, at the beginning of Marek, when he was speaking, he said something about how, yes, the cat knows and the cats do know. And my cat's name is Muji, so she really knows. She is it, you know. But I don't feel any pressure really to, but I do, it is true that I, and this I talked with Carol about too, because she said after she gave her Dharma talk, suddenly she started listening to the other Dharma talks in a different way. Thinking, oh, that's an interesting way to go about it. Oh yeah, I could do it that way. You know, it's true that it does change, that that the fact of sharing with others does change something about the Dharma for me. But it's not, there's no objective to enlighten, because I know that that's not what happens. And there's no, even not really helping. It's really about sharing. And it's true that it does change when, but the same is true for all of us. You know, we can all think, oh, how can I share the Dharma? How can I share? Or when you are, if you're cooking something and you're thinking that you're making it to share with other people, it's different than when you're making it just for yourself. Ready?
Good night, everyone.
Oh, Freddie.
It just remind me an old ad that we had in France about French fries. The name of these fries was McCain. So the ad was saying, the one who liked it the most, or the more, or the one who talk less about it, about those fries. And I always, that's how I perceive what you said.
What was it in French?
The one who loves these fries the most, or the one who talks the less about it?
Who talked the less about it?
Yes, because they're too busy eating.
Lisa?
Hello, everyone. Freddie was saying what came to mind when you said that sentence was actually the last word of Zen. That's what came. What is the last word of Zen? That's what came up when I heard that you said that in the sentence. And but I can see how it can be completely mind-boggling. as what is the last word of Zen can be.
So you're referring to, Lisa's referring to that we have a koan in which the question at the end, there's a whole story involved, and then the question is, well, what is the last word of Zen? I'm right, Lisa, you're referring to that koan, yeah. And that I did become obsessed with that koan when I was working on it. So I guess there's something in this for me with this thing with words. Obviously, I'm a writer, so there's a thing with words, but yeah. So you can ask yourself, well, what is the last word of Zen?
And speaking of cats and of cats, did you make a comment about there is a koan about a cat being being killed in the monastery? Have you felt tempted to make a commentary of this koan? I don't know how you feel about having it in our canon, and at the same time loving our cats. I never studied I never really studied Cohen's myself, so I'm very far from it, but it's certainly upsetting for many people, this Cohen. Maybe it was meant to be, but still, I wonder whether, of course, another thing about cats and koans and this koan about the last word of Zen, of course the answer is the same, and Muji knows it very well about this last word of Zen, and perhaps it's very similar answer to the previous one, but I wouldn't like to speak for Muji, but thank you.
Well, the koan of Nansen kills the cat. Yes, I have talked about it. I'm sure I have. And I won't go into it tonight, but can we see it? Basically what Nansen does with that, it's because there's monks on the east side and monks on the west side of the monastery arguing about a cat. So can we see this as, you know, they're involved in an argument about separation, division, delusion, a deluded belief in duality, right? Instead of seeing the oneness. And he asks them, if you can say a word, the equivalent of, if you can say a word of Zen, I will save the cat.
So it looks like everybody failed there. And the master, of course, failed. The students failed because nobody saved the cat. And
what does it mean he killed the cat? That's the question. We immediately think of, oh, he sliced the cat's throat. But what does that really mean? He killed the cat.
I don't know. It's not a philosophy for me. It's cat lives, and
it is. It's about the cat's life. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if we go into thinking, asking philosophical questions, perhaps it was what was fatal for this poor animal, that everybody was thinking about enlightenment, theirs or their students, about the monastery, and nobody was thinking about this poor animal. And
it's the problem for the monks. Yes, they were in their heads thinking deludedly. That's true.
Do you think? And do you have a feeling it's also a problem for us? Because it's a few centuries ago, so we will not save this very cat, but somehow we
bring it to our
but we represent the tradition that killed the cat and keeps this story in the.
But I ask you, Marek, what does it mean to kill the cat? We're not going to go any farther in it, but that's the question: is what does it mean he killed the cat? It's not what you think it is. I can tell you that much. It's a koan. You can't understand it with your head. That's the nature of it. You know, it's like Chagall saying, you know, whatever comes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I want to, understand it. For me, it's being uncomfortable representing the tradition or being associated with the tradition that has such a cruel story in the canon.
This is you're assuming that it's cruel because you're thinking you have an idea of what it is to kill the cat.
Because.
It's not what you think it is.
You know, because I can't help thinking, I don't know if you remember Disgrace by John Maxwell Ketzi, the book. The South African writer, maybe I mispronounce it, because Kutsi. Mm-hmm. He is the Nobel Prize winner, the There is a book, Disgrace, also the film was made, and it ends. So there is a series of it starts with a university professor who has an affair with his students and gets expelled from the university in South Africa. And it looks like this is the bad thing that happened to him. And then there is a series of experiences that each one is worse than the previous one. And the last one, which the books ends with, is at the veterinary clinic in the province of South Africa, and he has to assist in they euthanize homeless dogs, and it is depicted in the way that you know if you read it you would not be able to think what it is, what it means to kill the cat, or in that case, a dog. And
I think we have to stop with this, Mark, just because it's not really our subject tonight. However, the cat in Nansen's story is not what you think it is. And this, what happens is not what you think it is. That's all I can say about it.
Okay.
Would anyone else like to share? Say who? Say who's putting her shoe on her head. Can you say something about that? We can't hear you.
I think at the end, it comes a monk and puts the shoe.
Your shoe, yeah.
And then the master say, if you come earlier, I didn't kill the cat. I don't know the word, the really good words in English, but it was doing something to not kill the cat.
We still have to resolve what it means to kill the cat. And that's the crux of the matter, I guess. This will be for another Dharma talk, though, because we don't have time to go into it and tell the story fully and explain why Joshua puts his shoe on his head and who is Joshua and who is Nansen and all of that. These stories taken out of context have no meaning, you know. They have no... And if, you know, if we read them in a book, as sometimes it's presented as, you know, Japanese literature, if we read them, well, that doesn't, it's like Chagall, you know, it comes from your head, nothing comes from it. Because they're offering us a glimpse of absolute reality to the essence of no birth, no death. That's not to say that there isn't a cat that's alive and well, and a Nansen who's alive and well, and monks arguing about it. But the koan is pointing at something else. As is, what would I say if I said it?
Going back to the... What would I say if I said it? What came to mind immediately, similar to what Lisa said, was it's from the Tao Te Ching. I think it's the first text in the Tao Te Ching. And it's something like, I think it's something like, the Tao that can be said is not the true Tao. It's something similar to this. So this was what came to mind immediately when you started speaking. And I was kind of expecting because you used the expression so many times during all this time. It is it, and I was kind of expecting that you mentioned that it is your name, your Dharma name at some point, but it's just a commentary. It's not even a remark. That's what we're saying all the time. That's like what you were saying all the time. Thank you.
Well, and all of your Dharma names are that as well. So it's not just mine.
Exactly like last week, actually, you said I made a comment about something about the Dharma names and how it could be. It's the same. It's the same. And your own Dharma name is .
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I asked Carol what she talked about in her first Dharma talk. And she said, she couldn't really remember, and I said, yes, I understand. Although she did know, she talked about the koan with Bodhidharma who comes to Emperor Wu and says, the emperor says, who is standing before me? And Bodhidharma says, I don't know. So, which is a big piece to bite off for your first Dharma talk. I thought, wow, that's ambitious. But this, when I say I don't know, it's that as well. I don't know. I really don't. And now I know tomorrow Lisa's going to ask me what a title is for this talk, and I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's what would I say if I said it? So on that note, if no one has anything to add, I think we'll chant the vows. Thank you.